You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. This week, as we look back on 9/11 20 years later, one of the most comprehensive books written about United Flight 93 was Tom McMillan's Flight 93, The Story, the Aftermath, and the Legacy of American Courage on 9/11. It's the story of the plane that crashed in rural Somerset County, Pennsylvania, while passengers struggled to gain control from the hijackers. The passengers had already learned during cell phone calls with family members that terrorists had crashed three other aircraft in New York and Washington. Tom McMillan is with us today. Mr. McMillan, thank you and welcome to the program. Yours has been called the definitive book on Flight 93. What makes your book different?
Well, actually, there have only been two books ever written about this flight, amazingly. The first one was written less than a year after the crash. So it was kind of rushed to print. It did a very good job. It was emotional, talking most about the family members, but a lot of information wasn't available then. So the amazing thing is that you know, most of the focus was always on what happened in New York and what happened in D.C. And the Shanksville Flight 93 story was basically overlooked by a lot of folks. So I was surprised more than 10 years after the crash that there wasn't really a comprehensive book. And it looked like no one else was going to try one, so I thought I would try it.
Well, I enjoyed the book, and I think in being called the definitive book on Flight 93, if there are only a few, that narrows it down a little bit. But, I mean, your book is unique in many ways. You have two chapters in your book. And, by the way, we should mention that the book was written in 2015. We probably have learned some things since. But you have two chapters in your book where you talk about what you think happened the morning of September 11th, 2001 on Flight 93. What do you think happened?
Well, I think, you know, clearly the general story is that these folks, amazingly, in a very short period of time, came together and decided to try to take back the plane. I think one of the things that's out there a lot, we as Americans, we get involved in all these legends. Is you hear that, you know, they crashed that plane to save lives. They brought down the plane to save those people in the Capitol. But if you look closely at the transcript of the cockpit voice recorder, a few minutes before the plane crashes, in the midst of their struggle, there's one of the passengers says, "In the cockpit, if we don't, we'll die. In the cockpit, if we don't, we'll die." To me, that means they in their minds had an alternative to dying. This is speculation, but there was a man on the plane, a passenger who was licensed to fly small planes. His name was Donald Green. There was another man, Sonny Garcia, who had done 8 years of air traffic control for the California Air National Guard. These guys had knowledge of aviation. Maybe. Was it a long shot? Sure. But maybe they would have had a chance. I think that's what that quote, that raw intelligence, raw testimony in the cockpit, if we don't, we'll die, means. I think they were trying to save the plane. Again, it was a long shot. Obviously, they didn't succeed in that part of it, but I believe that was their goal. And they certainly prevented the hijackers from reaching their target, which almost certainly was the Capitol, have done, you know, additional damage to people, obviously, and to the American psyche.
Why do you think that the target was the Capitol?
Well, we know it was Washington, D.C., because they put that in the navigational instruments. The hijacker pilot did that. That there are two plotters who are still in Guantanamo. They both said in separate interviews that the target was, quote, Capitol Hill. We do know from 9/11 Commission investigations that bin Laden wanted the White House. But the hijackers here who were doing their prep work in the U.S. thought the White House was not easily recognizable from the sky. And I tend to agree with them. There are a lot of white buildings in Washington, D.C. Think of the difference between the Capitol and the White House. The World Trade Center was very recognizable. The Pentagon was very recognizable. Certainly the Capitol was. They did a lot of research on what was going on. We don't know if they knew. They may have known that on Tuesday, September 11th, both houses were in session. Both the House and the Senate were in session. So imagine the devastation if they had hit that building with 535 legislators inside.
One of the aspects of your book that is unique is that you write extensively about the backgrounds of the terrorists themselves, and not just the ones that were on Flight 93. What can you tell us about the terrorists?
Yeah, I was fascinated by that, and you know, to this, the extent that the book gets criticism. I was just doing a talk last night, and somebody brought this up. There's too much on the hijackers, and obviously, you know, as a historian, I understand why people think that. They want to hear about the heroes of Flight 93, but as a historian, you have to write the complete story. We can't write about Pearl Harbor without writing about the Japanese Navy and Air Force. The enemy is part of it. I was just fascinated in trying to get into how they did what they did, what their thought process was. We can never know everything, obviously, for sure. But, you know, it's maddening to me how they took advantage of our freedoms. Those hijacker pilots, the four pilots, were in the country for more than a year. They lived under their own names. They didn't have pseudonyms. They wanted people to know who they were. They had driver's licenses and joined gyms. And the muscle hijackers, the ones who made the attacks, actually were recruited from the training camps in Afghanistan. It was the one thing to point out is that Flight 93 only had four hijackers. The Al Qaeda plan was that each plane would have five man teams. The other planes all had five man teams. Al Qaeda could not get the 20th hijacker into the country. That's why Flight 93 was down a man. They had nine men nominated, various reasons didn't happen. One man made it all the way to Orlando in August that year, but a very alert immigration official was suspicious and turned him back. So that may have been one of the reasons. Two key points in the Flight 93 story: that it took off 40 minutes late. The hijackers had selected four flights that were going to take off within 25 minutes. Their idea was that this would happen so fast that nobody, not the FAA, not the military, no one could do anything about it. But Newark airport traffic, it took off 40 minutes late. And then this hijack crew, this smaller crew, took longer than they were supposed to hijack the plane. The plan, as we know from the guys in Guantanamo, was to do it within 15 minutes. That might have been a little unrealistic, but the other flights all did it within 30. These guys waited 46 minutes. So by the time they hijack the plane, it's already over the Pennsylvania-Ohio border, and it's almost 9:30. And remember, that second plane hit the tower at 9:03. So coverage has been on the air for a half hour across the United States. So when these folks started calling their loved ones on the ground, they were just, you know, terrified, saying, "We're on a plane that's hijacked." The unintended consequence is they got information back. I always try to make the point that the folks on the other three flights were no less brave. They just didn't know what was happening. Because of the delay, these folks were able to gather that information. And what they still did was just remarkable. I can't imagine how in about less than 20 minutes, they came together and decided to do this and try to take back the plane.
I heard a story on NPR yesterday. Families wanted to know how these terrorists, some of which couldn't speak English, were able to get apartments, driver's licenses, as you mentioned, pilot's licenses. Speculation that they had help. Your research find anything?
There's a lot of speculation. There's never been anything proven. There probably was some help. But remember, as far as the muscle hijackers, those folks who came over later, were in large part uneducated. But the four hijacker pilots were educated. Three of them had been living and going to college in Germany. So they were living in a Western environment. That's why bin Laden ultimately chose them. They had trouble for a while finding men who could fit the role of the pilots, who could operate in a Western environment. Because they lived in Germany and other countries, and one another had lived briefly in the United States, they knew how to operate in this environment, in this culture, and they were educated. And they kind of shepherded the others when they got to the U.S. They got the apartments. They kind of ran the show. They were here for more than a year. The hijacker pilots were here in the spring of 2000. So they lived here for 14, 15 months in the United States. And they were able to therefore set things up. This was very well planned. Again, it's maddening to look at it, how they, I mentioned earlier, how they took advantage of our freedoms. And they did plan. That to me makes it even more incredible about what the folks did on that plane, because they had less than 20 minutes to untangle a plot that had been years in the making. It's just astounding.
We only have about 2 minutes left, Tom, and I want to thank you very much for being with us today. You have visited the Flight 93 crash site and National Memorial many times. It is sacred ground, but actually that's more than a description, isn't it?
Well, it is. You get that feeling when you go there. And actually now, the way it is now, and I think this is very appropriate, the public can only get to about 75 yards of the actual crash site. You can see it and get close, but because it's contemporary, because it's so raw and so recent, only the family members can go out to the actual crash site. So it really is sacred ground. You know, when we get visitors out there in the summer as they're coming back from the beach and they see the sign on the turnpike and they stop it, and they say, I get the same feeling here that I got when I visited the Vietnam Memorial. And I think that's true. The difference being the Vietnam Memorial is on the Mall in Washington, D.C. The Flight 93 National Memorial is right where the plane crashed. You feel that you're walking on ground where something like that so impactful in the history of our country happened. And you go there to honor what those folks on the plane did, because had they not done what they did, it's very likely that plane would have hit the Capitol. Mm.
We only have about 30 seconds left. Is there any more to learn about Flight 93?
I don't know that there really is. The thing being that everyone who knows the story died in the crash. You know, there might be a trial of the two plotters down in Guantanamo, but they only know what was supposed to happen. They don't know what did. That's kind of the frustrating thing about this. We can only piece it together. We'll never have the full story, because everyone who knows what happened on board died when the plane crashed.
Tom McMillan, author of the book Flight 93, The Story, The Aftermath, and the Legacy of American Courage on 9/11. Tom, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much. My pleasure.
I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.